All right, welcome to English punctuation with dinging in the background. Why don't we start with prayer, and Conrad, if you'd lead out in prayer.
Thank you, God, that we can be here together. I pray you bless this time as we talk about punctuation and this detail of our school teaching. As you bless Joel as he leads the discussion, and the first person here to listen.
Thank you. Okay, first of all, I would like to take just a small poll here. Not you, Conrad. Of what kind of, if you think about teaching punctuation, and maybe especially in high school level, is there something that comes to your mind as kind of more difficult than others? Hard to get across, hard to understand, that while we have a few bright minds together, we can maybe come up with some good explanations or anything like that. Does anybody have any of those?
I found myself getting slow and confused between a semicolon and a period and a comma.
Comma and semicolon. When to use it. Okay. Why does it? There are a whole slew of rules. And the problem is, they're not. Since our job is to make things. Keep things simple and make things understandable, this is a little tough. The curriculums generally help us out here. But. In punctuation, there's a lot of rules that are not hard, steadfast. Different places do it differently. Different editors or different universities teach it differently. And certainly between American and English. And American English and English English. So, anything else? We'll hit on a few of those things.
Dashes.
Okay, and the interesting thing about dashes, too, is that, sounds like somebody's dashing over this. There's actually a couple different kinds of dashes, which we generally teach hyphens and dashes. There's actually hyphens and like dash M and dash N, right? However you say that, which just kind of muddies the waters more, but. Pretty intense. I don't even know if shutting the doors would help. Beating it into their heads. That ought to fix some problems. Okay, anything else besides dashes and comps?
Other one was vertical and phrases where you parentheses or brackets or.
So like a parent, so something that would be parenthetical, let's say, whether you would use commas, parentheses, or dashes, that sort of thing.
Bob, the man that's in town.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yes. And that's a little bit tricky, just like end punctuation, as we'll see, because some of it depends on the speaker or the writer, what they're trying to convey. Because you know, commas would have the... what would you say? Parentheses would be, you know, oh, by the way, right? And dashes is more, it emphasizes a little bit that parenthetical element. And so that depends a little, that's what's tricky about taking a blank, I mean, not blank, but a page full of words and trying to put punctuation in. Because sometimes, most of it's pretty straightforward. But those things are pretty tricky. Okay, so thanks for bringing that up. See if we can hit some of that. All right, if you think of anything else, just holler. or as we go through it, because we have to kind of just hit the high points a little bit. If there's something, hey, you want to talk more about when we're in the commas, you know, we'll stop. We're never going to do an exhaustive job on this anyway, so however far we get, we get. So, it's good. It really reminds me of teaching. You know, I get up and stand up in front of the class, feel totally unprepared, and have a cold and everything. So, which seems to happen during school a lot. So, just a little, I said this yesterday, but I'll just quickly review a little bit of what I think some teaching suggestions, and in this case, with English in mind, would be. The first one is that English is an interesting but complex language, and there's no need to make it boring, because your students will do a good job of that on their own. But keep it simple. Keep it as simple as possible. It's your job to cut through all the fog and fuzz, and for you to get something that makes sense. Now, here's I'll just interject this here in teaching. I found, at least for myself, that to really effectively teach, it goes, do you want some? Okay. It goes way past just knowing how to do it, right? Especially if it's something that maybe I've had trouble grasping, and now I can do it, but how am I going to explain it? And so one thing that has been really helpful for me, and English is one of those subjects, is that I can look through the rules, this makes sense. Take a copy of the page that they're going to be doing, or some review, and do it myself ahead of time. That way, I'm going to probably catch the things, if you know your students at all anyways, that they're going to be struggling with. And so you don't have to be, it also helps not needing to reference, you know, kind of stump. And that's fine if you get stumped sometimes. We all get stumped sometimes. But those things, probably even more so, like when I taught algebra and that sort of thing, do the lesson ahead of time. But some of these things in English where I would just sort of get a hold of the concept, do the lesson yourself, work your way through it, and those things start making more sense and fitting into place. Then you have to figure out how to explain it to every different person and personality and learning type that's out there. So, but that's one of the steps. Instead of going straight from, well, okay, I think I kind of know how to do this, to trying to do that, then you can really muddy the waters. So keep it simple. And focus more. I think it is more important to focus on the principle of how things work than, for example, list and specific rule memorization. And that is maybe more true in like what we talked about yesterday with the parts of speech and so on. What is a preposition? Not the whole box, because it's so big. But a little bit, one thing to keep in mind with the punctuation is specifically for the purpose of keeping things uncomplicated, believe it or not, when you're reading. And so keep that in mind. It's not supposed to be that hard. As you're teaching, use as many mind pictures and actual pictures and demonstrations as possible, which is a little similar to number 5. Use the board and class participation. So that's just a little review of that. So here, and you maybe all know this, and I didn't do just a lot of research, but from what I understand, here's just a short history before we get some more punctuation. Some cultures, some languages don't really need punctuation because of the way, that, like Chinese, they use, you know, figures and all that sort of thing. They don't really need commas and, you know, like we need. But in Western civilization, if you go back about 3rd century BC, Greek, one of those smart Greek guys, he decided it would be helpful if we had a way of, especially for somebody, you know, reading out loud, let's say. Okay, how are we going to make this so that we're not stumbling over this? So he's thinking about that. Long ago, there were no spaces. There were no punctuation. It was just a little bit like that, except that's probably more readable than some. So, and we'll get to that after a while. So around the 3rd century before Christ. Now, one thing about these timelines, I didn't even think of this ahead of time, but it gives you a little bit of an indicator how much of where you are in history. I'm not saying this was the first time punctuation is ever used, but you can see the BC and AD and 500. You can pick, you know, 3rd century BC. And he came up with this system that for pauses. We have a short pause, a medium one, and a long one, and that was the punctuation. And basically, if I understand, it would be what looks like a period now would basically would have been the equivalent of a comma. And then he had, so that was down there, and then he put a middle one for a little longer. It's like a colon, and still sometimes use it that way, which I don't think it was specifically because of this. I think it came from something else. And the other one then was the longest one, where you would have a full stop, was that. It was 3. Now, that would be the equivalent. Oh, that's sort of running uphill. So that would be the equivalent of a period. Now, yeah, essentially. Full stop. That's still what it's called in the British English. The English. Well, the Romans came along, and since they were much smarter and, you know, were able to kind of knock the Greeks out, they had better ideas. They did away with the punctuation. They thought that there is absolutely no reason to be inhibited by silly little things like punctuation. We should be able to read how we want to read. So apparently modern art is not all that modern. We had that going on. And that would have been, of course, you know, somewhere, I'm not exactly sure where, but before Christ a bit. Anyways. And then around 7th century AD, so we're talking, you know, roughly 1,000-year span here, somebody resurrected this old Greek way of doing punctuation. The same, I don't know if it was just in the reading, but basically the same punctuation, about 7th century. And things really, the punctuation really started catching on in the time of printing presses and that sort of thing. A lot of things in the 15th and 16th century is where a lot of punctuation evolved, and it evolved over hundreds of years to come to what we have now. And even, I think I have this right. Which one is it? I think we'll get to it. So like the question mark, for example, Latin meaning point of interrogation, right? So questions. And that really began its use in the 15th century. And I think we got, you know, like the colons and semicolons from some Gregorian chants. Some of the people that really worked a lot with punctuation were musicians. Some crossover there. The exclamation mark came from the Latin word joy. And interestingly enough, it'd be the letter I. So however you want to do that with, you know, but anyways, I on top of the letter O, big I, small O. That is I O is Latin. Yes, Latin for joy. And so we've obviously kind of made this whole smaller over time, and that's where we get the exclamation point. But from what I understand, the exclamation point has really only been on, you know, like typewriters and so on. I mean, it's been used, but since about the 1970s. Of course, I don't know when typewriters started, but that's, you know. So by the time we all came along, it wasn't all typewriters that were being made, right? So the other thing is this, the comma, the short pause, kind of made an evolution from this. It looks like a period to a slash to a comma now. And we have now the newest. Well, does anybody know what a interrobang is? I don't even know if that's correct, but if I just say it, you have no idea if I'm saying it right or not, right? An interrobang? Interrobang, I don't know. Anybody know what that is? That's our newest punctuation in the evolution of punctuation. And it can be written three different ways. You may recognize some of these. There's one way. There's one in here, another way. And then, of course, this one, you have a little trouble typing on a lot of them. But we just go like that. So that's kind of new, somewhat recognized punctuation. But you're not going to be teaching that, bro. This for interest sake. So, like I said, back in the day, like way back in the day, no spaces even, right? No, there was nothing to really tell. So all of these things came about for a really important reason. That was to bring clarity to reading. And so if you look at that, there's a whole bunch of things wrong with this. There's no capitalization, no punctuation, no spacing. And so you can start running all sorts of things together, right? And that is actually your first sentence on your basic Bible sentences, right? Now, you can obviously cheat a little bit and go down to number two and see, well, we're getting somewhere, right? I think we should eat Bob before we go fishing, right? And so there we have one of those really classic reasons for punctuation. Now, we can come up with some scientific things like Bob is kind of a non-essential part of this sentence and so on. But it's really, what we're doing is we're bringing clarity to the sentence by adding commas. And this is not probably the best writing either, but just for the point. I think we should eat Bob before we go fishing. Our sentence, what would be our independent clause there is, I think we should eat before we go fishing, right? And then anyways. And so that is another one here that I have down. Number four on that list. Bob enjoys the following: grilling, riding horses, and biking. And so he can be following grilling, or he can be grilling horses, or, you know, grilling riding horses. All sorts of things could be going on in the sentence. So, for clarity here, you can see number five, Bob enjoys the following. And we have a list: grilling, riding horses, and biking. Now, here's another little trick. You see these, and we'll talk about commas and all these, but just as we're going through this here, you notice the list: grilling, comma, riding horses, comma, and biking. Does anybody know what that comma before the and is called? Or did you know that it is a subject of debate? whether or not it should be there. Do you know what it's called? Well, me either, but actually, I think I do. The Oxford comma. Now, there is some debate. The English do not use this, and in fact, Will Aderstein, who was just teaching school and teaching English in Bangladesh, I was talking with him yesterday, and he said, "You know," he said, "I had some sassy students this last year, and I wrote a sentence," and he explained, and it was like this: where he had a comma, like a series, and he had a comma with an, and they said, "You're so bad at punctuation, I'm not even going to do my lesson." So he got, you know, well, he was taught that it's really optional depending on the writer. So it wasn't wrong, at least. Turns out the English do not use it at all. And probably a lot of places you go around the world, they're probably taught grammar and punctuation, those sorts of things would probably be the English version of it. You think that's right, Connor? Like in Europe? Like East, like Poland? Anyways, and so likely that's what had. They probably had some basic English ahead of time. And here comes this American, you know, this American goofball that doesn't know what's going on. And here, we Americans, we like punctuation a little better than the English, turns out. Even in abbreviations of periods and so on. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Even in America, it is considered, don't tell your students this, okay, but it is considered to be optional, depending on the editor and writer and so on. But I believe all of our curriculums teach that it needs to be there. The other commas are basically, I mean, they're separating, they're bringing clarity. They also are shortening, taking the place of mikpa ands in all of those places, right? And that's just kind of clumsy and so on. So, there was that bunny trail. Okay. And some of these are just going to kind of hit the basics. And if you have any questions, we'll stop and talk about them. Just a little refresher. Like I said yesterday, there's really nothing new under the sun. So, just kind of see what we can find here. So, the period is one of the most basic, you know, you read along and you don't really think about them unless they're not there. And then, what's going on here? And its most basic use, or what we think of a lot of times, is it ends sentences, declarative sentences, imperative sentences. So, sentences that make a statement, sentences that give a command, make a request. Which is a little tricky if you're making a request in a question form with a period at the end. But anyway, so just for example here, you know, Bob said, "Please shut the door." Very basic. We've got a period at this would be the quotation part would be imperative actually. And then it's used for a lot of abbreviations, especially we Americans. Now, there's some abbreviations that even we have decided are not necessary. Anybody tell me what some of those are? Well, abbreviations, acronyms, whatever. So, some real common ones. We said, hey, this is so common, we don't need to put a period for abbreviation anymore. FBI. I think, like the FBI would be one. FBI, CIA, I think, NASCAR, those sorts of things, some of those things. But the British, really, or the English, better, really don't use, like for doctor, I don't think they would use a period for abbreviation. There's a lot of ones we use that they don't, so if you ever run into that, if you're teaching somewhere, but. So this number 7, you can see Bob Jr. went with Bob Sr. to see Dr. Brown on 2nd Street. And we have 4 periods in there. And now street, obviously, is the end of the sentence, and it probably should be written out. But for the sake of what we're doing here, that's also an abbreviation. Junior, Senior, Dr. Street. Okay, any questions, comments, clarifications on period? That's kind of a pretty easy one, generally speaking. Not probably as many questions. Okay, then the question mark is most often used to ask a question, right? The point of interrogation. However, it can also be used, and here again, this depends on the intent by the writer, right? So if we look at our next two, a question mark can be used in sarcasm or disbelief. Okay? Look at number 8. Bob is a genius. This is a statement. This is declarative. We have a period, right? Now, if we put number 9, The only difference is a question mark. And we say, Bob is a genius, right? There's some disbelief or sarcasm or something. There is a question there, even though the wording is the same and it's set up as a declarative sentence, right? So that is a difference in meaning that only the writer can tell, you know, put in there. The exclamation point is the third end of sentence punctuation. And it is used to, you know, exclaim, right? Sudden, strong feeling, like Bob hollered, "There's a mouse running up your leg." That would probably require an exclamation point. Right? Unless Bob is very calm, cool, and collected. And there again, probably the exclamation point or exclamation mark is one of the ones that really you have a hard time. Sometimes it's pretty obvious. A lot of times it's pretty obvious. But of all the end marks, that's probably the ones with the most question, like, what do they mean if you're just putting them in at the end of sentences? So, to be really honest, I did give a little bit of leeway sometimes in punctuation if it made sense. A couple different ways. Now, if it didn't make sense of something else in the paragraph or some, you know, they have to have court awareness and catch on to surrounding details too. Some answer keys will give you a couple options as well, depending on what you're using. So those are the end. Those are the ones that are basically used for end of sentences. Then we get to the commas. And commas. Now here, I mentioned this yesterday, but this is specifically with commas. In the years of teaching, I've lost some of it now, but I pretty well had all the comma rules, you know, at the tip of my brain. But it turns out that not all of the really good editors and people that know where commas go know all the rules all that well. I was kind of surprised to find out. Somebody that's a much better editor has edited an entire book and publications and so on. I was asking him about something. Oh, he doesn't know the rule. It just goes there. And so it's like this kind of, you know, intuition of commas. And most of us aren't born with quite that good of, but a lot of it's just probably, I'm not sure where he picked all of it up. But commas are used for a lot of different things. One of the main things it's used for is to separate. Well, it's used to separate items in a series. It's really used to clarify. So here's some examples. That's what it is. Back to Bob here. Number 11. Now, if you have a pen or a pencil, you may follow along and see what you think. Bob jogged along the beautiful winding river. Now, is there a place in here we could put a, could and should put a comma? What's that? After beautiful. Now, these are two adjectives describing river. Now, there are some exceptions to adjectives, modifying that we don't put commas in between. Does anybody know what those adjectives are? Color, size, and number. Yes. Right. So if we would say, for example, that Bob jogged along the blue winding river, blue is a color, right? And it just doesn't. Sometimes these make more sense than others. As far as a lot of times when you're separating things out and you have a comma, a lot of times and makes sense there, right? The word and. And we're actually taking the place of it. Now the next one, Bob bought hammers, nails, and screwdrivers. And there again, that's pretty basic, but these are basic Bob sentences, right? So where do the commas go here? After hammers, after nails, right? Because these are words in a, these are nouns in a series. And 13. Bob ran over the hill beside the meadow and into the woods. Pretty industrious old Bob there. Where would these commas go? Okay. Okay. And here we're separating phrases, right? We have phrases in a series. So, and it can be clauses in a series. It can be, but anything in a series like this, we use commas. That's kind of one of the ones that's used a lot. Also, non-essential elements. And where we get into a little bit, okay, do we use commas? Do we use parentheses? Do we use dashes? And there again, it depends a little bit on the intent of the writer. These would be not necessarily parenthetical. Well, let's just look at them. Okay. Number 14. Bob, beginning his fifth year of farming, had great crops this year. Any commas be appropriate in there? Okay, so what we would have is we'd have beginning his fifth year of farming. I understood who is, right? Would be set up. Now, what we have left, what I'd like to think is when you put, when you're setting something non-essential up, what is essential is really important. Like, we've got to have it in order to have a sentence, right? If it's non-essential, it's nice, it's good information, but we don't really need it in order for the sentence to make sense. It doesn't change the meaning, it just adds information. So, Bob had great crops this year. And that is what the sentence is talking about. The rest of it's additional information, talking about, you know, kind of saying where Bob is in his whole farming experience, right? The next one, Since Bob has farmed for 5 years, we could say that Bob is an experienced farmer. Barely, but we could say that. Okay, comma in here. Okay, after years. And here again, the actual, this comes at the beginning. This would be one of those adverb clauses, right? So this is coming at the beginning. It's the other thing to remember is introductory phrases, clauses, you know, those sorts of things. But the sentence is, we could say that Bob is an experienced farmer. That's what the sentence is talking about. The rest of it is really non-essential to the sentence meaning. And next one, Bob is in fact a skilled farmer. And I'll just say, the sentence is, Bob is a skilled farmer. Right? Bob is, in fact, a skilled farmer. It's non-essential. Okay, well, we're sort of running up to 3 o'clock, aren't we? Seems like that happens a lot. Okay, don't worry, I only have 10 more pages. I think we're going to have to sort of slide through what's important here. Semicolons. We will touch on this. I don't have much here. Semicolon, that was one thing that was brought up, semicolons. A little bit tricky. They're kind of like those big, heavy-duty Hulkin commas, right? And so when commas are kind of too little and wimpy to use, we pull out the semicolons. That's one use for them. Like this. Number 18. I put in the commas, but I left out the semicolons. We'll just have to go through this quickly. Bob visited Crater Lake, which is in Oregon, the Redwoods, which are in California, and Bryce Canyon, which is in Utah. I didn't actually Google Bryce Canyon, but I think that's where it is. Okay, anyway. So, semicolons are used in a series where commas are already used. That's one way they're used. So, like after Oregon and after California, right? And these are these are in a series, right? Crater Lake, which is in Oregon. So it's being used the same way a comma would be, except we've already got a comma in this. Part of the series, so we have to use a semicolon. Another way is when we have two closely connected, and I didn't mention this in commas either. So there's basically three ways of connecting independent clauses, those clauses that are sentences all by themselves. All right, we can put a period and a capital letter in there. That's kind of the most basic one. If they, if they're fairly closely related, let's say, one might build on the other. You know, we can do a semicolon in between. And that's one of the uses of a, one of the functions of a semicolon. And of course, the other way is if the sentence, you know, we keep carrying on with the sentence, it can be a comma and coordinating conjunction. Those are really the three ways of doing that. That's one of the uses for semicolons. Don't really have more time for that, probably. Colons then have some different uses, but one of the main functions is introducing a series or introducing something like a formal quote. It's really introductory, a colon is. And so an example of that would be Bob needed the following for his picnic. If you see following, there's probably not like the cart was following the horse, but you know, used otherwise, there's probably going to be a colon coming up, and you can see that series then. Or before Bob ate, he had one thing on his mind, his ever-growling stomach, right? That would be, it's introducing the thought there, right? And formal quotes, most quotes get a comma, formal ones get a colon. Anyway. All right, quotation marks. This is one I wanted to cover because it seems like there's some confusion with quotation. It's a little hard to get. And here's now is our job to simplify things, okay? We basically have two options with closing quotation marks. We all know it's not real hard to get that quotation marks are kind of go around quotes, right? That's pretty easy to understand. And even single quotes, you know, within that where you're, where somebody that's talking might be quoting somebody else. The other major use for quotation marks would be like small works, like poems, stories, songs, articles, versus italics underlined for the books and major, you know, plays and whatever. But there's really only two options here when we get to the closing quotation marks, right? And we have a punctuation, we have a period or a comma or an exclamation point or a question mark, colon, semicolon. They can either go on the inside or outside, or if you're really not sure, you can kind of sneak them on top, and then hopefully the teacher doesn't know which way you're going there, which way they're leaning, right? And so basically, if we've got an end mark, we can put them either inside or outside. There's two options, right? So it's our job to simplify this, right? And so periods and commas, these are kind of the good old boys that are used all the time. Always, no exceptions, except unless you're English. This is an exception, but since we're Americans, it's not. Always, the quotation marks go on the outside of your periods and commas. No exceptions. So, let's think of something else with no exceptions. Let's get our no exceptionals down. And that would be our colon and semicolon. You know, similar, look similar. Always, no exceptions. Our closing quotation mark goes in the inside of these. Alright? So if we can keep these in our head really well, the only ones that are questions then would be question marks and exclamation points. And maybe you don't have any trouble with your students with this. I have over the years. And so those two are the tricky ones because they can go either way depending on the sentence. Those are the only two that you really got to look closely at. You know where they go with periods and commas. You know where they go with colons and semicolons. So we simplified it down, now that we know that, to question marks and exclamation points. Now, once we know that, we can focus on those two and leave the rest out. And really, the only rule for that is, if the quote itself is an exclamation or a question, your quotation marks will be on the outside. But what I like to think
about this, let's say we have a bunch of words that's a question, right? And we have a question mark, and we think, now, we know we've got our starting quotation marks here. Where does this go? This is a question. Well, we have to leave the question mark with the question, right? Or it's no longer a question if we take. And so I actually think of it as putting them on the, you know, I'm putting these on the out, I'm leaving the question mark inside that quote more than the putting this on the outside is a little bit how I think of it. Same with the exclamation mark. So here's some examples of this. I think. Where are we? Number which?
23 and 24.
Oh yeah, I left them off. Okay. So starting with 21, Bob said it looks like a rainy. It looks like rain today. All right, that one we know. We go on the outside. Okay. Bob said it looks like rain today. However, this was a false alarm. Okay. So we know those go on the inside. No exceptions. Now these two. Bob yelled, "There's a tornado." Okay, where would our closing quotation marks go?
Inside.
What's that?
Inside.
So, our which is on the inside?
Yeah, quotation marks. Where is it
out? I think it's out. Well, and here again, it depends. Well, since it isn't, there is a tornado is an exclamatory statement in this case, right? And so since this quote is exclamatory, we're going to leave that exclamation point inside this quote. And so therefore, our closing quote will go outside, if that kind of makes sense. Then, the next one, are you sure Bob said tornado? Now, is the question here is now, is our quote a question? No, the sentence is a question. So we kick the question mark outside, right? We don't leave it inside of the quote because our quote's not a question. There's probably better ways to understand to explain it, but that's one the way that I've found helpful for me and to explain is whether or not we're going to keep that end mark with the quote or not, or kick it out. So. All right, we are pretty much out of time. So we've got apostrophes, we've got parentheses, we've got brackets, we've got hyphens, we've got dashes, we've got ellipses. The dash is one thing. I do have 29. Bob drove to Springfield, Oregon, not Missouri, to buy new parts for his mower. This is a real interrupted... We're interrupting ourselves here. That's one way dashes are. It's kind of a different than parentheses. And it's more emphasis or interruption, really. They're used to set apart an interrupting phrase, clause, interrupted speech, or the opposite of a colon, really. So let's look at this. 30, jogging, swimming, and biking. These are things that Bob likes to do. We've got the series at the beginning and the explanation later. It's kind of the opposite of a colon in this case. Hey, you make a good bell. Ran out of bells, apparently, from when we started, right? So, okay, any real pressing questions before I dismiss you?
One thing I ran into this last couple of terms is explaining, like, if you have a